two other lanterns down the street.
Mildred, Doc, keep this floor covered. Jack, you take the rear of the hotel. Mildred, you and Doc spread out here. I'll be back.
Jack faded into the shadows, his pale body lit for only a moment as he passed. Doc and Mildred took up windows on opposite sides of the hotel wall facing the street. Ryan sprinted up the stairs. It was going to be harder than a blue freezy's ass in January to hold the hotel, but it was also going to cost the SecMen dearly if they tried to invade. He found Christy upstairs putting ammo for her gun in small heaps beneath the windows of three rooms facing the street.
Guess we stepped into it this time, lover.
Been there before. We'll see our way clear of this one, too. I'm going up on the roof. Get a clearer vantage point from there.
Do you want company?
No. The rooftop's probably going to be the first position we have to fall back on.
Ryan leaned close to her. Then, he headed out of the room. JB stood near one of the barred windows overlooking the main street. The hotel was only a few blocks down, ringed by gunmen who had overturned buckboards and brought out crates from the general store to build a barricade.
You got a back way out of this place.
Your friends are dead. They got no way out of that hotel. Whether Kirkland's men get them this hour or the next, it's gonna happen.
Maybe so, but I'm not gonna sit down here all high and dry and pretend it doesn't matter to me. My place is with them, and that's bastard sure where I'm gonna be.
Maybe you think me and mine should throw our hand in with yours.
It appears that's what you were asking Ryan to do earlier.
Well, it's different. That man is facing a certain chilling in the position he's in now.
I don't see it much removed from what you were asking, except that you aren't standing in there with him like you talked like you would.
Are you trying to shame me?
You asked me a question, I answered it. You don't like the answers I give, don't be asking questions.
If the plague isn't real, then maybe we got a chance of getting shut of this place. Start over somewhere new. Always a place in a ville for a man knows blasters.
Can't argue with that. And I wouldn't want to, but I gotta get to my own work.
You're throwing your life away, J.B. Dix.
They aren't dead yet, Anna, and neither am I. We've come out of some tough spots before. Probably gonna see a few more before any of us catch the last train west. Come on, Phillips. You've got to have a white rabbit's bolt hole around this place somewhere.
We got a tunnel that'll get you out of here.
Where does it come up?
At the blacksmith shop next door. Got a corral there and sells Greenbrook horses. If times got hard, we always figured a man afoot wasn't going to make it. Needed him a horse if he was going anywhere.
Show me.
You're a fool, JB.
I guess we'll see about that after the smoke clears.
The trap door at the other end of the tunnel was heavy with packed earth. It took real work to get it open, and the whole time, JB had to wonder if one of Kirkland's SecMen was going to be standing at the other side of the room waiting for him. Nobody was there, though. He climbed out of the tunnel and brought up the duffel containing the ammo he'd gotten from Phillips and put together himself, but stopped when Anna grabbed his pants leg. She surged up out of the ground to join him, grabbing his shirt.
You don't have any idea what you're walking away from.
Anna pulled her body close, and JB felt the heavy pressure of her firm breasts against his chest.
I got an idea.
And you're still gonna walk? Even walk into your own death?
Made a promise that I'd be there. I'm not the kind of man to walk out on people.
If things had been different, then?
She looked into his eyes wistfully, not bothering to disguise the desire burning there. JB looked at her, admitting to himself the desire he felt for the young woman. But it was only passing fancy, and he knew himself well enough to know that. What he had with Mildred, there had never been anything like it in his life. She understood him in ways that no woman ever had, while at the same time remaining one of the most vexing creatures he'd ever encountered.
Maybe.
There hasn't been a man for me since Eddie died. Maybe there never will be. But if you get back this way, or you hear of Tinker Phillips' gun shop, you come on around for a visit.
Sure.
She pulled his face into hers. Anna walked back to the trap door. Her walk suggested the curves and the passions that burned under her clothing.
You put up a hell of an argument.
But you're still going.
Yeah.
I wish you well, then.
JB went over to the horses, his Uzi canted at his hip and gripped in one hand. Anybody that came through the shop door while he was bridling a mount was fair game. Moonlight and lantern light drifted in through the patchwork glass windows. JB took down a bridle and fitted it over the head of a bay gelding that seemed gentle enough. He didn't bother with a saddle because he felt he was already working on borrowed time. Then he led the gelding to the rear doors of the blacksmith's shop. He put the duffel across his lap, then kicked the horse in the sides with his heels and headed through the alley. Two men stood at its mouth, peering down the street at the hotel. Both turned to look at JB, but neither of them recognized him. He rode past them.
Man, get your fool self chilled out there, bastard, quick!
JB ignored the warning and rode straight for the hotel, knowing there was every chance he'd get killed in a crossfire between his friends and Kirkland's people. The men stared after him as he rode out into the center of the street. One of them thought one of their own had gotten courageous enough or stupid enough to try another attack on the hotel. And that, JB knew, might very well be the kiss of death, because Mildred and Ryan were good enough to empty the horse's saddle even now.
Rider coming in! It's JB!
It took only a moment for what was truly happening to crystallize in the Sec men's minds.
He's one of them!
Fire!
JB stayed low, aiming the horse at the front doors of the hotel. He kept his stomach pressed tight against the duffel bag so he wouldn't lose it. Twisting, he brought the Uzi to bear. When the Uzi was empty, he turned his attention back to the hotel, holding on to the horse's mane as it vaulted up onto the boardwalk. He knew it had taken some hits during the firefight. He'd felt them shiver through the animal's flesh. Two bullets grazed the armorer's left side, tearing through skin and glancing off the bone beneath. The doors opened ahead of him just before he thought the horse was going to smash into them. JB tried to pull the animal up short, but it was nearly dead, ignoring the pain in its mouth from the rough handling of the bit. Inside the hotel, JB leapt off his dead mount and pulled the duffel clear.
Hold your goddamn fire, Mame! He's one of us!
JB glanced across the room and saw the two women huddled behind the counter. One of them sat in a wheelchair, brandishing a huge gun. JB reached for his fedora. He then pulled the duffel over his shoulder. His side felt as if it were on fire.
John Barrymore, I was not sure if we would see you again in this life.
I'm harder to get rid of than that.
JB stepped across the mess the dying horse left when its bowels evacuated across the wooden floor.
Did you get Mildred back?
The gods permitted me to perform that small task.
Doc took up a position at the window.
But I fear I have escorted your dear lady from the frying pan into the fire.
You know my views on that.
JB joined the old man at the window.
Get a bigger frying pan. Where's Ryan?
Up top.
JB crossed to Mildred.
Keep yourself safe until we get out of this.
You do the same.
JB found Ryan on the roof.
Ryan!
Come ahead!
Straining to see, JB barely made out the big man in the shadows. He heaved himself onto the roof.
Got good news and bad. Which do you want first?
The good. Maybe it'll make the bad go down easier.
The good news is Tinker was willing to part with some Plasex. Got a mighty big store of it for one man. Said he's been saving it for a special occasion.
Figure on booby-trapping the building for when they decide to rush us?
Well, if they give us enough time, I'll have the Plasex set so it'll take out the bottom three floors and leave the structure standing. If we get god-awful lucky, we can get away in the confusion.
Draw it up and let me know when you need me. I'll get Dean up here with the Steyr. He's good enough to snipe anybody who gets to feeling too lucky.
Give me a half hour.
What's the bad news?
If you're expecting people in this villa to rise up with us and take a stand against Kirkland, it isn't gonna happen.
Tinker Phillips and his family?
Dealing themselves out of it.
Can't say that I blame them on the face of things. We'll do what we can.
Over, under, or around. One of them will get it done.
Always has.
Outlanders!
Ryan roused himself from a semi-sleeping state he'd allowed himself to drift into during the past hour. He and JB had spent 2.5 hours setting the Plasex around the hotel, tying all the remote control detonators into the broadcast unit JB had. All of them would detonate at prearranged times, only seconds apart. Ryan trusted the armorer's skills in the demolitions area. JB had brought down several structures when they'd been back with a traitor on Warwag 1.
Outlanders!
Peering over the rooftop's edge, Ryan picked up the Steyr. Kirkland was out in the middle of the street, standing there in what looked like a glass box that sat in the back of a horse-drawn wag. A dozen gunners stood around the wag, protecting it. Ryan couldn't believe it. He shouldered the rifle, keeping the barrel back far enough that none of the SEC team could see it. He put the crosshairs over Kirkland's broad face. Fracture lines ran across one of the flat surfaces, but it didn't penetrate. Inside the glass box, Kirkland had flinched, but stopped short of throwing himself flat. The SEC men surrounding him weren't as cool about getting shot at. They went to ground and aimed at the hotel.
Stop firing, you stupid bastards!
Okay, Kirkland, you got my attention.
Christie joined Ryan.
He's built himself a bulletproof box of armorglass, lover.
Putting on his own private show.
You people are in a coffin.
And still got plenty of room for company. How many of you want to be chilled trying to nail the lid on?
There's another way we could work this.
Tell me.
Christie, get the others. We're gonna get out of here.
I know you chilled Liberty and his people. Proves you're harder to deal with than he was. The position of outer perimeter SEC chief is open.
Don't see how we could trust each other.
We've got to start somewhere.
Sure. I trust you when I end up with a bag full of bullets. You trust me? How are you going to know I won't take up that outer perimeter position and just keep on riding?
Have you heard about the plague?
Yeah, I also heard it's a fake. You tried to kill two of our people last night, only they killed your men instead. They found those air rifles and the darts you used to administer the bacterial injection you referred to as the plague.
You're lying!
Got no reason to at this point. Jack!
Below, Jack threw the captured air rifle and darts into the street.
We didn't have those when we rode into Hazard yesterday. People that saw us know that. Word's gonna spread, Kirkland, that your plague is just a big fake. Then you're gonna be flat out of power in this ville, if they don't string you up.
You're lying! You're just trying to get these people to throw their lives away in an attempt to save your own ass!
Ryan watched the storefronts. People of the ville had gathered within the shops, not wanting to be caught out on the streets. But they were drawn to the approaching storm of violence all the same. And they were hearing his words.
You chose how it was going to be when you made an attempt on my people last night. And when you kidnapped one of them to use against us. Today, all bets are off. And devil fuck the hindmost.
You're signing your own death warrant.
Hell of a lot of signatures before you decided to add your Hancock to it.
Ryan glanced back as the rest of the companions and Albert joined him on the rooftop. Ryan felt restless energy fill him. He watched as Kirkland glanced around at his troops, getting ready to make the call.
Upon my soul, do these old ears deceive me?
Sounds like a carnival, Doc.
Wag, look!
Jack pointed out of the ville, down the route that the companions had followed. Mildred shaded her eyes. Ryan took out his field glasses and studied the approaching wag. In another life, it had to have been a recreational vehicle. Ryan recognized it from vids he'd gotten a chance to look at, but now it was weathered, new metal spliced over on top of old, probably replacing rusted areas. Almost 30 feet long, it sailed along over the broken terrain on drastically altered suspension that raised it nearly 4 feet from the ground. The vehicle was painted a rainbow of colors. Big clown faces in white grease paint adorned the sides. The eyes were made up of the windows in the rear section. Dozens of balloons were tied to the upper deck of the RV. Crates festooned the vehicle, some held in cargo netting and others strapped to the metal sides. A sign on the side read, Uncle Joe's Traveling Wild Weird West Show. Two muddy pig skulls were mounted on top of the engine cowling, and plastic eyeballs on springs dangled from the empty eye sockets. Ryan scanned three men inside the RV's cab. One of them was behind the wheel, and the other two sat to the right. All of them were dressed up in outlandish clothing.
A traveling circus? Did I read that aright, my dear Ryan?
Appears so.
Inside his bulletproof cage, Kirkland began to yell out orders, but the loud circus music kept Ryan from hearing what was being said. The SEC team fanned out to meet the approaching wag. Dust spanned out behind the RV as it glided into Hazard. But other telltale dust spumes trailed it.
Big wag's not alone.
JB's face looked gray and haggard. Ryan knew that they all needed some rest. Maybe back at the redoubt it would be possible, but first they had to get out of the ville in one piece. He trained the field glasses over the terrain, spotting at least five other dust trails.
We're on triple red, and who knows what's about to come leaping out of the bag.
The circus wag break to a halt.
Citizens of Hazzard! Uncle Joe's traveling wild, weird west show is pleased to make your acquaintance!
The man's voice sounded vaguely familiar to Ryan, but it went back a lot of years. He picked over his memories, searching for it.
We are here for your amazement and edification, and for the amusement of children of all ages. Come see the strangest beauty creatures ever taken into captivity. She, the two-headed woman. Drink, a scabby soul twisted by rad corrupted genetics that he's got no bones in his body. In a 5-gallon pail, and we got more. For the next little bit, sit right back and let us entertain you. Just for a little bit of Jack that everybody can spare.
I know that voice, Ryan.
I do too.
You remember Handsome Wyatt?
Below, clowns with green and red wigs hopped out of the circus wag and began to open crates on the sides of the vehicle. Inside the crates were metal cages containing live muties. The sight Ryan could see held 5 of the creatures. One of them was Shishi, the two-headed woman. The second head lay behind the first, not really a head at all, but some kind of spongy growth that possessed eyes and a mouth, and the same blonde hair the mutie woman had on her real head. She was old and nearly naked, with running sores all over her body. She sat placid and docile, spittle running down both sides of her mouth as she ignored all the activity going on around her.
Yeah, I remember Handsome Wyatt. Rode with Trader for a while.
Ryan stopped looking at the muties. They were to draw attention away from the circus wag. He already spotted movement through the thick armor glass.
Before I cut off his left thumb for stealing gas from Warwag 1. He's lucky the Trader was lenient that day. It didn't outright end his life.
Well, this looks like something Handsome Wyatt would come up with.
Stories had traveled with and to Warwag 1 in those days. The Trader was known to pay for stories that he considered investments. Some of those stories had always been about members who had drifted onto the crew of Warwag 1, then drifted out. Trader's family had spread out, and people were always eager for news.
You figure he brought his act back closer to home?
That's his voice, and that's an ace on the line.
If he finds out you and I are here, he'll chill us as soon as he can put a gun sight on us.
Yeah?
Could be this party's gonna be even bigger than we thought. He's got at least 5 other wags waiting out in the brush.
Play our cards right. We wait, see what happens, and maybe he won't miss one during the confusion. He doesn't know how this hotel is about to come apart.
Oh, now maybe you aren't interested in what old Uncle Joe has for you, because you got your own act going on, huh? I see a man in a glass cage out in the middle of the street in this ville, and that's something you don't see every day neither.
The clowns continued unveiling cages, stripping canvas from some that held hideously malformed animals. The Sec Force working Hazzard started to spread out, getting into position.
If either one of those sides get overly ready, it's going to make things more difficult for us.
Ryan lifted the stire.
So let's open the ball for him. I got the clowns.
Leaves me the Hazzard Sec teams.
JB took up the Uzi and leaned out over the rooftop.
Now!
As one body arced backward, thrown by the force of the round, Ryan settled the crosshairs on another target. The rest of the clowns pulled weapons and took cover around the circus wag. The top of the wag popped up, and a man flipped an M60 machine gun out on a tripod.
They come carrying heavy.
In heartbeats, the main street cutting through Hazzard was a bloodbath in the making. Ryan swiveled his attention back toward the bill's perimeter. Dust trails from traveling wags flared up again as they came down the streets. They were small passenger wags, 2 of them pickups that rode on high suspension like the circus wag, but these were painted camo military colors and stripped down to necessary armor to lighten the weight. The small wags flared out at once, letting Ryan know that they were following pre-planned routes. The highway jackers had a sizable amount of firepower and evidently the ammo to spare to properly show it off. Bullets scraped paint from the circus wag that didn't look to be penetrating either the metal or the windshield. Kirkland's Sec forces gave ground before the Predators. Mildred pointed to a team of Sec men charging the hotel.
Kirkland's targeted us.
We knew it wouldn't go easy.
Ryan studied the circus wag as it moved toward the line of Sec men in the street. The wag carrying Kirkland's armor glass cage backed away. Dozens of fractures appeared across the clear walls. It was a miracle the glass held, but